And welcome back to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley. And I'm really excited about this. We've got a new segment of the show. If you've just heard, it'll be on every Monday or every first Monday of the month between 1 and 2. And we'll be talking to Peter, the private investigator. Welcome, Peter.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for having me on your program.
Absolutely delighted to have you. Peter, before we get started, we'd like to know a little bit about our guests. And I guess the very first question I've got to ask, what made you decide to become a private investigator?
Right. So the short potted history is HSC in 1980, which is giving away my age, but never mind.
Yep.
Lucked into the very first job that I went for, which happened to be in a merchant bank in Collins Street in the city. And progressed with that career all the way up to what was known as a champagne cowboy, a foreign exchange dealer. through the boom and bust of the banking deregulation. Then we came to 1990 when the bubble on that particular area burst, and it was back to Melbourne with my wife and first child. And pretty much had no career prospects at all. So answered an ad in the paper basically saying, do you have a driver's license and can you type? I couldn't really type, but I could keyboard pretty efficiently. So I went for a job interview and lucked on commencing as a insurance investigator, basically going out and investigating insurance claims, generally back then motor vehicle type accidents or thefts, etc., and progressed through that through a few different employers, and then the GST came in. So, you know, nobody wanted to pay superannuation or anything, so they said you had to get a business name. So I elected to get a company name and thought, well, I'll put up my own shingle. So started off in 1990, registered the company in about the early 90s, and then from there just progressed, and very fortunate, about 16 years ago, commenced a relationship with a large corporate specialising in retail profit protection, as we call it these days. And in the meantime, yeah, had the shingle up, and pretty much people would get to know what you did, and if they could refer you or they needed some help themselves, then they'd give me a call.
That's terrific. Peter, obviously you haven't had any background in the police force, because I thought probably a lot of investigators come out of the police force, but obviously not in your case.
Look, I think I'm probably a rare exception, to be quite honest with you, because I suspect the vast majority of people in my industry are ex-police officers, yes.
Does seem to be. Peter, now, I'm like everybody else. I only go by what I see on TV, and, of course, that can't be wrong. The impression I've got of the PI, and I guess everybody listening would have just about the same, it's a person who gets around a flashy car, gets beaten up every couple of days, and he has this parade of gorgeous women following you. You're not going to tell me that that's wrong, are you?
Look, unfortunately, I don't have the flashy car. I have to be very careful about my comment about flashy women or otherwise. Been married for way too long to fall into that one. And you'd be surprised to hear I've never actually been beaten up either.
Gee, that's all right. Peter, do you specialise in a particular area, like divorce work or only retail, stuff getting stolen, or do you cover the whole gamut?
Yeah, look, I mean, things run par for the course. I do have done a fair share of marital husband and wife or relationship type situations. Been involved in, family law situations as well, where things are falling apart or about to fall apart. The corporate profit protection's been a steady line of work for the last 16 or so years, which has been very fortunate to have. And then I have been in, I do work for solicitors and things like that, and that could be all sorts of things. But one of the other areas My week is split into about, well, pre-COVID was split into about 50% field work, which is literally out in the car, not a flashy car. And the other 50% is basically desktop-based, so office-based desktop work. So at the moment I can do the desktop work, but I can't do too much of the field work.
Fair enough. So, Peter, do you ever get a case where people ask you to go and get information, and so you go and you get it? It may be, well, I don't want to limit it, but it could be the likes of divorce or something like that. Do you ever get a case where people then just refuse to believe what you tell them? You know, you say, well, I can tell you this, this and this is a fact, and they say, oh, no, you're rubbish, you're just wasting your time. Do you ever get that to happen?
Not too often. Generally, by the time people contact me, particularly if it's, you know, sort of a marital relationship type situation, I have to be honest with you, 90% of the time I'm working for the female. And one of the things I can say over 30-odd years of experience is I've never, ever had a female wrong about the male being up to no good. So it's 100% success rate. And I think by the time they contact me, they've got a pretty good idea that A, something's going on. B, they've generally got a bit of an idea as to who the third party might be. And C, quite often they've had a bit of a crack at it themselves and perhaps then realise that they, you know, hopefully need someone of a professional nature with a bit of experience to get them their answer.
Peter, when you get the answer, because I want to get onto the cases, but we also want to build up a bit of image about yourself. Well, first of all, why is it mainly the only women come to you? And secondly, once you've got that information, do you always have to go to court, or are you considered somebody who the courts will just accept your report?
Yeah, look, I have rarely been to court. In fact, I've never been to court for a domestic matter. Again, as I mentioned before, 90% of the time I tend to be working for the female, and to be honest with you, I'm a lot more comfortable following males around than females. For a couple of reasons. One is there's always that sort of sleaze factor, and the other thing consideration is the motivation of a male trying to employ a private investigator can be let's say less could be a little bit dubious, to put it politely. So you have to be careful with harassment and obviously, things like restraining orders and IVOs and all that sort of stuff. The bottom line is that I am technically their agent and I am subject to exactly the same restrictions than what they are. So I have to ask that question and rule that out, or at least get a guarantee that there's nothing like that in place, because I've got the same restrictions are placed on me.
Yeah. Peter, why do you think it is the women that come? I mean, I know you say that you feel more comfortable doing, acting for the woman. Why do you think that there's more women that want services of a private investigator over what a male would?
Well, my experience has been, I think the women just basically want the answer. So one of the phrases I use when I speak to people is I deal with confirm and deny. So I get the confirmation, and given my knowledge of what I mentioned before about the 100% success rate, yep, I'm pretty confident I'm going to get them the answer that they're looking for. And generally, it's the person, the third party is the person that they suspect, not always, but pretty much going to be the case. And then they can make, that puts them in a position of making decisions as to what decisions they might make in respect to the family and the future. But I have to say, I do get a surprising amount of repeat business in that area. Yep, people that ring me back in 3 or 4 years' time and basically pretty much, you know, that bastard's at it again kind of conversation. And one of the things I always say when I finish... when I've got the answer for my female clients, I have this throwaway line, which is a leopard never changes its spots. And interesting enough, when they ring me back 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the track, they always quote that back to me. You were right, a leopard doesn't change its spots.
Peter, just very quickly, because I need to take a quick break just to take some sponsorships and we want to get on to talk what we're talking about. Peter, so do you ever get orders that happen very often where, say, a woman comes to you and because that's mainly domestic, because I guess the industrial stuff is just happening all the time. But if a lady comes to you and says, right, I think my old man's doing this and he's doing that, and you go out and she thinks, I think it's with my girlfriend or whoever it might be, do you ever find out that he's actually doing it with more than one person, that there could be two or three?
No, that hasn't necessarily happened in the period that I'm involved in looking on their behalf. But I dare say, and they probably well have knowledge that there may well have been more than one affair over a number of years, yeah.
Yeah. All right, Peter, I've just got to take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
Sure.
Welcome back to Community Connections, and you're with Alan Collier right through 2 o'clock and we're talking to Peter, the private investigator. Peter, while that song was on, I've had a couple of people send me texts, as you probably saw me on the mobile phone, and they've asked the question with, well, you've talked, I think, I can't remember what you called it, but anyway, I call it shoplifting, whatever that was, and also with the matrimonial and the insurance fraud, is there a sort of an age group, or is it younger group, middle age or older group in those sorts of categories?
Okay, so firstly, the in respect to retail or business, the old terminology was loss prevention, which everyone would really know. Yep. The new corporate American speak is now profit protection, because that's somehow has a more positive connotation than loss prevention. So we try to call it profit protection or lean in that area. As far as ages go, if we're talking about a corporate work, I mean, obviously that can be any age. With the private investigations, the husband and wife relationship type stuff, surprisingly older age group than perhaps what you might expect. I would say on average 55 plus would be, yeah, which is a little bit surprising. So, and I've had, yeah, there's been some very, I think, perhaps there's an element that whilst children are being raised, that maybe, you know, perhaps the lady puts up with a lot more or is prepared to put up with a lot more, and then it becomes to the point where the children are independent. Perhaps there's a little bit more access to finances as well. So, yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I've worked for people in their 80s, believe it or not. So
that old?
Yes.
You'd think they'd pass it, wouldn't you?
Yes, yes. Well, there is an interesting story which we'll get to at some stage over the next few months, I'm sure, in respect to people in quite an old age bracket.
All right. Well, let's. I know we're keen to hear a case from you, so but you've got one that you're going to tell us about, please, Peter?
Oh, look, it's more of a general thing. It's to try and sort of move the focus a little bit away from the matrimonial stuff, because to be honest with you, that's probably only about maybe 10 to 15% of what I actually do. So one example of something that might interest your listeners or people in business within your listenership is checking up on what personnel are up to, particularly someone like a sales representative.
And I was a sales rep years ago.
Well, there you go, asleep in the car at the local park, I think, most of the time.
No, so, never.
So I've done some of these over the years, and there's been obviously, you know, the obvious thing about what time they perhaps get going in the morning when you're supposed to be on the road at 7 and probably don't leave home till 10. That's usually the first one, but it's also about where they're going and where they say they're going, and that again could be not exactly where they're supposed to be. And one of the other trends that might come out of that is, of course, that they might well be moonlighting for either a competitor or even setting up their own business, so to speak,
in the boss's time.
in the boss's time in the company vehicle and all that sort of thing. So that's sort of that's kind of some of the things that I've looked at over the years. Obviously, again, key personnel, that might be setting up in business in opposition or looking to do that, and trying to protect your intellectual property as best as you can. So it can get quite involved.
Peter, how would it? All right, I must admit, many years ago, in fact, right up till I was retired, I did some selling, but I was more in marketing. So how would you sort of do that? You would turn up the person's place first thing in the morning and follow them, or how would you progress that sort of investigation?
Yeah, you're pretty much spot on. As I said, as I alluded to, the charter is that they're on the road at 7 o'clock, and you know, I'll be honest with you, rarely has that been the case. But obviously, I'm being employed because there is a level of suspicion already. So look, I would say generally a sales rep should be out the door around 7:30. For the ones I've looked at, yeah, you'd safely 9:30, 10 might do the school run and go back home and then shoot off when the traffic is lighter. So there's 2 hours a day times 5 days a week that's basically lost, you know, stolen, whatever you want to call it. And again, it's where they go. So, I mean, you know, one of the things we'll talk about over time is that it's not easy to follow someone around day in, day out, you know, hours on end. And, you know, it's just the sequence of the traffic or the traffic lights, and it can all come to an abrupt halt. It's nothing like the TV and the movies, I can assure you of that. So there are hiccups along the way in respect to all avenues of field work. It's not a precise science. Hopefully experience counts for a little bit, but I still make some mistakes. So you just have to be honest with your client and say, look, I've messed up. I got in the wrong lane. I couldn't make that turn. They went through a red light. I couldn't get through, that kind of thing. But again, getting back to the sales rep, you know, it's where they're actually going, where they're attending. And I flippantly made a comment about a sleep in the car in a park. Well, that's actually has happened on at least one occasion with a sales rep that's basically snoozing in a park around, you know, not far from the office or whatever, you know, waiting for 4 o'clock to come when they'll log in and say, well, that was a big day.
Pretty tough. Peter, I'm just going to take another quick break and we'll come back with more.
Sure.
Thanks. Peter, we touched on it before. We had these couple of questions from people about the age bracket. We talked mainly matrimony. We didn't say a lot about the shoplifting or what it's now called, and also insurance fraud. Are they mainly young people or are they middle-aged people, or is there a demographic, or is it right across the board?
All right, well, I'll deal with shoplifting first. So, look, that can be a highly organised operation, and the ages, in fact, there's a trend out there where gangs of underage children are used to actually shop theft. And the reason for that is, of course, if they do happen to get apprehended, there's very little that can be done in the courts or by police, etc. They're basically a smack on the wrist kind of thing. So there is that trend, but generally shoplifting could be anyone of any age. There's people that are out there pretty much making a living or supporting a drug habit purely from some sort of defrauding or shop theft. And with the insurance fraud, that again, the age could be sort of pretty much anything for insurance fraud. Now, I have to be careful with that one. I have to point out I do not have the appropriate registrations or licenses to undertake work cover or TAC investigations. You need to have specific arrangements with those two providers. Yep. Which I don't, but that doesn't mean to say that I can't go out and basically establish how active someone may or may not be. in respect to someone who's either off work or, you know, left work or whatever the circumstances might be. And I do work for solicitors where people are claiming some sort of medical incapacity or whatever. And again, it's pretty much just go out there, have a bit of a look and see how active or inactive they may or may not be and what tasks, you know, they're able to complete. You know, perhaps, you know, go shopping and carry, you know, 12 heavy shopping bags from the trolley into the vehicle and back into the residence, or, you know, mow the lawn, that kind of thing.
Peter, we don't want to give away your operation because that's not fair. I mean, that's your job and we don't want to give that away. But supposing, we'll put it into hypothetical, I decide that I don't want to work anymore and I'm finding a back injury or whatever, or stress or something. From your point of view then, does that just, like, you've just got to sit for days on end down the road from their property, or how would you investigate a case like that?
Yeah, look, I mean, basically, for a lot of these ones, it's an allocation of hours to go and have a look.
Yep.
Unfortunately, I'm getting a bit older and the days on end are probably beyond me now. I have done in the past, sat there for 8 to 10 hours waiting for anything to happen, and that can be quite challenging in a vehicle with the windows down a crack and all that sort of thing. But look, these days, and most clients and their expectations is, if you haven't come up with anything for about a 4 or 5 hour period, you'd probably live to fight another day and perhaps come back at a different time. Obviously, weekends can be a little bit different. Public holidays can be different. Generally, probably less so in respect to people on an insurance claim, but generally people are creatures of habit. So they tend to, if they're going to leave home, they kind of leave home pretty much the same time, 5 days a week at least. Everyone seems to run late on a Friday, which is another fascinating observation that I've experienced over many years. So, look, going back to the age group question, there's no real particular age group for any of this kind of stuff. It can be surprising.
Yeah. And of course, they're always going to get caught somewhere down the track, aren't they? Like, they can bluff along on any of these things as long as they think, but they will get caught somewhere.
Yeah, and I think, people are a bit of a wake-up now, but the early days of social media, particularly Facebook, I mean, people were putting so much stuff on, but pretty much living their life vicariously through social media, and you could almost, you know, you they're almost telling you where they're going to be or what they're doing and what they've been doing, and, you know, it can be contrary to what they're supposed to be capable of doing, or in fact what they should be doing but in fact aren't doing. So
Peter, I've just got to take another quick break and we'll be back with more, and hopefully you've got a funny case that we can finish up with.
No problem.
Thanks. Welcome back to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley, where it's 2:09. And, gee, the hour's gone really quick and the temperature is 20 degrees. We've just jumped up one from 19 and now we're heading for 21 with mostly sunny with a late shower or two. Hope it's not too soon. Anyway, down to 7 tonight, 15 tomorrow, showers increasing. Friday 19, partly cloudy, and Saturday 22. And I have with me Peter, the private investigator. Peter, have you got a bit of a funny case you can tell us before we have to go?
Well, it's not funny necessarily as in humorous, but to tie off the insurance fraud one, we did have one example where we were looking at an employee that was taking time off work, and the employer was a little bit suspicious about the motivations. And as it turned out, when we went out to the address, from the front, everything was closed up, no activity, nothing going on. But we could hear this sort of buzzing sound. And anyway, as we do, sit there and have a look in those days in the street directory, and looked in the street directory and found that around the back of the property was parkland, like public space and parkland and things like that. So I went for a bit of a wander and went round the back there and had a look, and this chap was out there working on his deck. out in his backyard and in his backyard. So we rattled off about, I think, about 4 or 5 hours of footage for someone who was not well enough to get to work. And needless to say, that put them in a bit of a compromising situation. So,
Peter, what do you mainly take videos or photos when you're on a job?
Yeah, look, video camera used to be the be-all and end-all, but to be quite honest with you, the phones these days are that good that the quality and the perhaps not the zoom, but yeah, I use the phone a lot more than I use anything at the moment, but I do always have a video camera in the car.
Oh, that's fair enough too. Peter, also, what do you what sort of qualifications do you need to be a private investigator?
Well, there are some courses, and I think I do have to hold a private investigator's licence. That's the first thing. So I'm licensed by Victoria Police.
I'd say your qualification for that comes from through the police, does it?
Yeah, I hold an inquiry agent's licence through Victoria Police, the same division that does security guards and things like that. And there are certificates that you do need to complete. I've actually completed certificate 3 and 4 in what's called, I think, investigation services or things along those lines. But other than that, there's no other qualifications.
So those certificates that you've done, Peter, what do you have to do to get those qualifications?
Oh, look, to be honest, you've just got to complete the courses. So if you've had a fair bit of field work and experience, then it's almost just completing forms and sitting into on a few lectures. And
I'm just trying to get out what the course is. Is it actually like about surveillance or is it legal stuff that you can and can't do or what sort of stuff is it?
Yeah, a bit of both. Yeah, a mixture of both. So what to be careful of? Obviously, you deal with Privacy Act. You've got to be very careful of the Privacy Act. Things like harassment and then generally, yeah, the surveillance part of it. Look, my experience is about 50% of the people can do it and 50% of the people can't. It's just one of those things. You've either got the aptitude for it or you don't.
Peter, do you have any powers over a private citizen or you've only got the powers of a private citizen?
No powers whatsoever, other than you probably can't get moved on if you're sitting in a public place, which people don't necessarily realise.
Right.
So you have to try and explain that at times, that you're actually in a public place and there's not much that can be done about it. If you're there for a legitimate reason, then you're there for a legitimate reason. There's very little they can do. But you try and avoid that confrontation if you can, but it does come up from time to time.
Terrific. Peter, look, unfortunately, I can't believe how quick the hour's gone, but the hour's gone. Look, I look forward to having you along each month on the first Wednesday of the month. I got the Wednesday right between 1 and 2. Peter, it's been fascinating, and I thank you for your time, and I look forward to you being a guest with us certainly for a long time to come.
All right. Thank you so much, Alan. It's a pleasure to meet you and your listening audience.
And we'll be back with more, and we will say that as we get into this, as we've said off air, that we will start to take some questions in the near future.
Yeah, looking forward to homework.
Thanks, Peter.
Thank you.